in falling towns, looking to trade some time for some way to get around. Oh, fast in my paper crown, as the howl of the wind that blows it all to hell. I am the king of the ancient town. I am the rain of the young.
Special alert. Special alert, Jim, for anyone in the DMV. We have a Rocking the Suburbs live event coming up. Special alert.
So DMV does not mean drivers.
No.
What is it? Motor vehicles. Division of Motor Vehicles. Right. That's it.
Sorry.
It means what? It means D.C., Maryland, Virginia.
Right.
So if you're in that area of the Mid-Atlantic, mm-hmm. you want to clear your calendar right now, mm-hmm. the evening of Wednesday, September 12th, and you want to head over to Vienna, Virginia, go to Jam and Java.
Yep.
Right, pay your money down.
Street. Yep.
See folk singer Matt Holubowski. And then after he's done playing, we're going to go up on stage and we're going to interview Matt.
It's going to be so cool.
He's going to do a few more little songs.
Yeah.
Some solo acoustic stuff. So it'll be a little bit different. And then we'll take some audience questions. We'll record this whole thing for future podcast episodes, right?
We're going to grill him right there in the spotlight. It'll be a tough interview. You know, notoriously tough interviewers we are.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be a really cool opportunity for fans of Matt and anybody who likes really cool indie singer-songwriter stuff to get a really unique experience.
So Matt has his first album coming out in the U.S.
In the U.S., yep.
Called Solitudes, mm-hmm. and that should be out by the time you hear this. You know, I just think anybody, too, wants to be a part of the podcast experience.
Absolutely.
A little peek behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Maybe get your voice on the show.
Yeah.
Any of that.
Audience
Come on,
questions.
Have a good night. You get music. You get... you know, to hang with us.
Yeah.
You get to buy us drinks. You know, what more
what
you
a
know,
bonus.
Could you ask, right?
Yeah. It's and it's a cool venue, actually, if you've never been there. Jam and Java is really cool. They got food and they got a really great sounding room where they do the main shows. So, will I be required to speak any French?
You better brush up,
all right? I better start brushing up.
I can't make any promises how Matt's going to want this thing to go down. So, I better
be ready.
Better get ready for that.
Ciao.
Exactly. All right. So, that's Wednesday, September 12th, Jam and Java. Vienna, Virginia.
Mark it down.
All right, let's do our podcast, you know, this episode.
Yeah. Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we go back to 1998. Patrick, what do you remember from 20 years ago?
Spice World, Jim. Spice World.
It's Friday.
This Friday.
You brought over some, what is this?
This is
Flesh and Blood.
Mm-hmm.
Flesh and Blood IPA. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, you like this. Dogfish Head.
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good stuff.
I've been really into it, too. It's very tasty.
Very refreshing. You know, last night we went to a restaurant. It's a chain, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Called World of Beer.
Oh, I've heard of World of Beer. Yeah, but I haven't been there.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
Yeah,
there's
one in Arlington, yeah. I'm sure they got a lot of beer.
They do. It's a world. It's a whole world of beer.
Amazing.
That's good branding. It's got to bring people in.
I think so, too.
All right. So it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foss.
And on this Friday, we are going to talk about an important album anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, a couple of weeks ago, was an album by Elliott Smith called XO came out.
Mm-hmm.
So August 25th, 1998.
Right.
And this is sort of in the middle of his discography.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it so noteworthy, do you think?
Well, I think it's his best album.
Okay,
I think that he synthesized the things that he did well throughout his career, probably the best on this record. He had just signed a new deal with DreamWorks Records before this came out. The first two albums he did were on Kill Rock Stars, so they were smaller scale.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, early in Elliott's career, Jim, he was known more as a acoustic sort of solo singer-songwriter, right? He never really had a band, right? He always had sort of different musicians playing with him. But a lot of the earlier stuff, the Elliott Smith album, self-titled record,
right,
and then his second one, you know, were much more acoustic-based, and there was, you know, introspective songwriting on there. But always an incredibly talented songwriter, really interesting turn of phrase, like amazing ability to combine a melody with, you know, an observation that he had made in his life. Now, because of the way his life ended, was it a suicide? Was he murdered? Nobody knows. We know he had a lot of problems with substance abuse later in his career. That tends to color people's perceptions of somebody, like, you know, think of Jeff Buckley or Tim Buckley or, you know, anybody whose life ends prematurely. You sort of have this view of them. But on this record, I don't think there was anything unusual other than the fact that Elliott was achieving a peak in an artistic career. And he was combining like amazing Beatlesque melodies. He had a whole full studio finally to work with. He had a producer. Got a look in your eye when you're saying goodbye, like you want to say hi.
Again, the radio was playing Crimson and Clover. London Bridge is safe and sound. No matter what you do, repeating, nothing's gonna drag me down to a death that's not worth cheating for. Someone half as smart, you'd be a work of art.
He was really fleshing out his melodic and sonic vision in a way never, you know, possible before, because maybe one, he didn't have the time and the money to go into studio and get the sounds that he really wanted. And two, he was just really blossoming as a songwriter and singer. And 1998 was a key year for him. But I think a lot of the songs on this record, XO, have that spirit, yet they're fleshed out with just incredibly crisp and beautiful pop music. And some of the songs on here are just like, you know, really amazing tunes, Jim. It's a great record.
So pick one and then let's
hear it. Let's see. You got the CD sitting around here somewhere, don't you?
I do. I'm going to tell you something about this in a minute.
Why don't we start off with one that's probably the best known of all these songs. It's a song called Waltz Number 2.
I love it.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's beautiful. Melancholy, sad, but it combines the acoustic guitar and like really beautiful flourishes.
Yes. So I'm going to tell you something about Elliott Smith that may seem very contradictory.
Okay.
But it makes sense to me.
Okay.
But before I do that, I'm just going to tease that for a second. I want to, you mentioned the CD.
Yep.
So in my collection, I think I have three
Elliott Smith
CDs. I don't have the first one.
Well,
but I have the next three.
Yeah, and right? I should correct something if anyone out there is a really big Elliott Smith fan.
Yeah.
He put out a record called Roman Candle.
Okay.
And it was essentially a solo album, but he was still in the band Heat Miser at the time, duo, and it was really like a tossed-off. It wasn't,
right.
in my opinion anyway, not a really official debut solo album.
Right.
So I consider the self-titled Elliott Smith to be the real first one.
I think
one.
Most people
yeah,
do.
I just wanted to clarify
and
that.
I don't have... That I guess it depends on what you consider by have, because I think at one point I know this to be the case. I do own this, the self-titled Elliott Smith 1995, mm-hmm. as an MP3 download.
Oh, okay, that counts
at
for
some,
sure.
At some period in time when I was buying yeah. like through iTunes or
doubt.
Whatever.
That totally.
So
counts.
I got that at one point, but I have CDs of either or. EXO and Figure Eight.
That's probably the classic body of work.
And it's funny because I discovered all of these albums after they came out.
Oh, is that right? That's so interesting.
I got into Elliott Smith through the Royal Tenenbaums.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
Which came out in...
I forgot all about that.
Came out in 2001 and it had Needle in the Hay.
Which is on the first album.
In a crazy scene.
Oh, yeah.
Right? A crazy, intense scene. And part of the reason, not only... did I just watch that and think like, this is an amazing song, right. number one. But second of all, if you know anything about Wes Anderson, you know that he uses almost exclusively like 60s rock in his stuff. So for him to use a more modern song meant I should really check this out, yeah. right? Like this guy knows something.
Yeah,
right?
This is as good as the Kinks.
So that's where I got into Elliott Smith. And then I got all these records.
Oh, wow. That's
anyway,
so cool.
So here's the contradictory part.
Okay.
Why I think Elliott Smith was so great. There is, I think, a certain lightness in his music that, not being really a musician myself, to any extent, I can't really describe like how he accomplished that. But I feel like there's sort of kind of a bounciness to it. There's mm-hmm. sort of a ethereal nature sometimes in some of the songs, and you feel this kind of lightness to it. But yet at the same time, it has incredible weight.
Yeah,
it sounds like those two things should not exist in the same. From the same artists and the same music, but yet to me they do.
Yeah.
And it's the weight that actually makes me sometimes not want to listen to his stuff.
No, I know.
Because
I know.
It can be such a downer,
it really
right?
Can.
It can be so hard to listen to it. You really have to be in the right mood to listen to this stuff. But yet the lightness part of it is what I think makes it at all accessible, right? Otherwise, it would be probably so depressing.
Yeah,
that you
no,
want...
I think you're exactly right. That's a great observation. Yeah. And I think that that's what makes it so striking
right.
when you come across it. You know, you're like, wow, there is something happening on the top end and the bottom end of this. And it's really amazing.
It's almost like, how do you pull that off?
I know.
I don't know.
I know. It really is incredible.
Because there's not that much to it.
No.
You know what I'm saying? It's
no.
It's pretty sparse, you know, but it does not come off at any point as sort of like coffee house music or any of
all.
That.
Mm-mm.
Do you know?
I know what you mean. And, you know, I think a lot of it to me goes back to craft, and mm-hmm. it's very difficult now when, you know, we're here and you have all the tools of rock and roll history at your disposal, but it's very hard to use them very sparsely and yet do something really effective. It's almost like Raymond Carver, the writer, you know, it's almost like trying to write like Hemingway. You have to like to write that spare and that smart is really, really hard. It's much harder than like putting 1,000 didgeridoos on your album, right, and overdubbing it. It really is.
Right.
And that's what this album does so well.
Yeah.
I think if you play a little bit of a song like Bled White, you'll hear a different side to what Elliott did.
Drinks on the high to take away this curse.
let me tell you something, and I don't know what this means exactly, but I went to pull this out of my collection, XO, just today, because, you know, you said you wanted to record this episode. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm going to listen to this again, and I probably listened to it a long time. In fact, it's been such a long time that I listened to it that I pulled this out of the CD collection, and immediately when I pulled it out, I knew something was wrong.
Felt too light.
It felt too light. And this is something only somebody who you know, plays a lot of records would notice.
That's a bad feeling.
Right?
Yeah, I know.
Because the CD, like, how much does a CD weigh?
Right.
And I'm like, this doesn't feel right.
Two ounces short there.
I open it up.
It's gone.
Where's the CD go?
Damn it. I don't know.
I don't know if that's a good, I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. It's a good sign because I was actually, you know, at some point playing it. But it's bad because I lost track of it. Where did it go?
I don't know.
It's in some CD player, either present or former. I don't know.
Did any of your cars ever burst into flames?
I don't think my daughter stole it.
No, that, probably that, not.
But with streaming now, there's no reason, right?
No, she would have stolen the whole CD if she was going to steal it.
I don't know. I don't know.
Wow,
it's gone.
That's something. But it happens to all of us, though, doesn't it?
I'm upset about it. I mean, I was still able to listen to the album because I could just go on Spotify and listen to it. But I'm upset that my CD is gone.
Future butterfly, gonna spend the day higher than high. You'll leave beautiful confusion. Ooh, once I was you.
So let me ask you this about Elliott Smith. How does your feeling or opinion about his music, how has it changed since he died? Like, knowing that now.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I try not to let it color the albums that we've talked about, the first four, in my opinion. You know, all the way up through Figure Eight, I thought he was pretty coherent. I saw him on that tour, though. And I'll never forget this. I was at the 9:30 Club, and Granddaddy was opening up for Elliott Smith. My wife and I were at this show, and they played about four or five songs, and somebody from the balcony shouted, "Hey, man, play acoustic," you know, like during a break. And two songs went by, and then Elliott said, after like two songs, he said, "Don't say anything about playing acoustic, man. Like, this is my band now." So it was pretty clear that he was processing it, but it was really taking a long time for it to actually reach him. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So you could tell that he was in the grip of something and was going downhill. So I very much try not to, you know, think about the line we just heard from Bled White, happy and sad come in quick succession. You know, I think the guy probably had a lot of demons. I don't know, but it's hard to interpret it from where we are, but I think we should not try to, you know, create myths, and I try to connect with the record the way I connect with the record, and try not to, you know, to let other things bleed into it. I don't know what possibly could have happened, and it's a tragedy that, you know, the dude was so talented that it slipped away, but I don't know.
I mean, certainly a lot of internal struggles.
Yeah.
You can hear that in the music. And so then when that happened, I remember that. It was like the mid-2000s or 2004
somewhere around there.
You know, it was like, well, damn. But you sort of like, was this the inevitable end of the story, right?
I wasn't necessarily surprised.
Yeah.
And I think what XO does so well, and why I like it so much, is that you can hear it on a lot of these songs, the way the lyrics are so provocative, and just, but they're just underneath the surface. The guitars and the organ and everything else are kind of right up there. But if you dig just one level down, then they're right there. You know, you don't have to dig all the way down into the murk, but they're right there, just in a perfect place. And I think the production and the execution and the songwriting is just unbelievably great. But and some of the lines, you know, like right there on a background harmony, drinking to distractions just a waste of time. Okay. Who hasn't ever felt that in their life? Like, it's amazing, the observations. He just was such a great chronicler of feelings and thoughts and the way people acted, and he was able to write it so succinctly.
Do you also think, well, I want to just ask you real quick here, before Elliott Smith and after Elliott Smith. So yeah. First of all, I think an artist who he gets compared to a lot who came before him was Nick Drake.
Yeah, sure.
So
sure.
Would you say that that's a fair comparison?
I think it's okay, especially for the early stuff.
Yeah.
But again, two artists who, you know, I think probably there's a comparison there for some reason because both of their lives ended early.
Right.
And they both wrote very introspective songs that were really beautiful and succinct also. But
right.
Yeah, so I think that's fair. Yeah.
And then I think the impact mm-hmm. later, I think you just hear it in just tons of indie rock today.
Sure
I mean, you know, there's so many artists that we've talked about a lot who you can hear, you know, they draw inspiration from Elliott Smith's music.
Without
probably
a
too numerous a name. Really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This record, I think, really was landmark
he,
in that
he
sense. He
kind of predated, I think, a whole era of music that came within the last, you know, 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
Right?
And what's interesting to me, too, as I mentioned, this record was on DreamWorks. This is a major label release. And not a lot of people achieved that and still have this indie cred. Like, it was Elliott Smith. Like, he was the, you know, the king of the underground, kind of sad songwriter guys. But he put this on Jeffrey Katzenberg's bill or whoever, you know.
I know.
It was on DreamWorks.
Isn't that interesting?
It really is interesting.
At a time,
him
too.
Him and Rufus Wainwright, I think, both did it. They were both on DreamWorks, and they both kind of like made these really impeccably crafted albums.
At a time when that, you know, getting on a major label, that was not easy to do.
Especially somebody for like him who had written these terribly sad songs. Like his most well-known song was Between the Bars.
You're not working with people who are like developing like marketing plans and stuff like that, right?
I mean, it's amazing.
Like, what are they doing with this record, right?
It's another reason I think it's such a landmark record.
Yeah. All right. Well, the great stuff.
Yeah. So everybody should check that out. If you don't know this record, folks, please go and listen to it. It's really good. And obviously 20 years later, still enduring and inspiring people. So
XO.
XO, and the cover is fantastic. This weird like collage of like double exposure and like photos overlaid, and you kind of see him in the corner there, like reaching over to the control board. I think it's a wonderful piece of art.
It's Mr. Patty endorsed.
There it is.
All right. We have probably some other album anniversaries coming up.
Yeah,
we need to look through.
Yeah, you made a really good list at one point for this year.
I think that was like the first half of the year. So I need to work on the second half of the year. But we're going to be doing more of these.
Yeah.
Doing more of this. So thank you for flagging this.
Sure, absolutely. If anybody has any anniversaries that they think are key, let us know.
And you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but a couple years later, Figure Eight, that's not too bad either.
No, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many people have had their picture taken in front of that that mural?
I know.
Is that in L.A.?
In L.A.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
You can tell us what you think about Elliott Smith by emailing rock@suburbspod.com or calling
612-440-1984
or finding us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram @suburbspod. What should we play out with here?
What do you want to hear, Jim?
I don't know.
What were you playing earlier? Question mark? Is that the one you're playing with the big saxophone hook?
Yeah.
I love
that. Let's do that.
All right. I love that.
Question mark. And we'll talk to you next week.
Totally clear. You think that all things have a way that
Like, I traded the Boozmobile for a microphone. I could see that.